Warning, the Savage Nation contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised. And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. And here he is, Michael Savage.
Tackling inequality isn't easy. It never has been and it never will be. The challenges we face have been decades in the making, and the problems we set out to address will not be solved overnight. But make no mistake, the people of this city have chosen a progressive path.
Come on, baby, let the good time roll. Come on, baby, let me thrill your soul.
Well, they're dancing on Mulberry Street. They're dancing in Harlem. They're dancing in Manhattan. They're blowing pot all over the streets. The progressive movement is alive and well. Suddenly it's 1890. Welcome to the Savage Nation. People think that in New York City, with the election of an open progressive, i.e. slash socialist, in New York City, they're going to basically pull the rich out of their apartments, steal their shoes, and take their wives away from them. I've got another guest coming for them. What they're going to have is exactly what they had before with crime. We're going to go from stop and frisk to go and risk under Mr. de Blasio. If you look at his history, you'll know exactly what's going to happen. If you look at who he worked for, you'll know exactly what's going to happen. If you look at his wife, you're going to know exactly what's going to happen. And if you look at how he nakedly used his children in his campaign, you'll know exactly what you got. I want to ask you a question on the Savage Nation tonight, because the de Blasio election in New York City is not well known outside west of the Hudson River. No one knows who he is. No one heard of him. If you stopped 9,900 people in San Francisco and said, what do you think about de Blasio winning in New York? They would say, huh? Is that a new jewelry store? They don't know who he is. If you stopped 9,900 people in San Francisco and said to them, how do you feel about Christie winning? They might know who he is. He's bigger than life, while de Blasio is smaller than life. And yet he managed to win in New York City. That just shows you what a wonderful campaign his opposition used. I want to combine the question of Christie and de Blasio for a reason. Christie is a middle-of-the-road conservative Republican in some regards. I know that many of you think he's a sellout, he's a rhino, he's no good, and I disagree with him on 50% or more of his policies. But I'd certainly rather have a Christie than a de Blasio as president. I'd certainly, for certain, rather have a Christie who'll give me 50, 55% of what I want than a Hillary Clinton will give me less than zero. I'm trying to explain to you, it's wonderful to be a purist. It's wonderful to stick to your guns. But, you know, talk radio is not the election itself. Many of you get confused, and I'm afraid many people in talk radio confuse themselves with actual politicians. They scream. They yell. They get apoplexy. They spoil their clothing. They think that they're campaigning when, in fact, there's nobody in the room but them. And they have to remember that they're not actually running for office. Running for office is much different than shooting your mouth off on a microphone in a toilet bowl. And you have to understand that it may be entertaining to people screaming in a toilet bowl about what should be done and who is true, and I'm the Pope, and I know who the true believers are, and anyone who doesn't believe in what I believe in shall be lined up against the wall and shot when we win. That sounds wonderful. It's very theatrical. But now go out and try to win an election in this country today with the state of mind that exists. The electorate is not what you think it is. The electorate is much wider than what you think it is. I've written purist books. I don't have to name them for you. I don't intend to name them for you. Many of you know what they are. I'm not here to sell you a book. And in a book, you can be a purist. In radio, you can be a purist. But the minute you run for office, you have to understand it's a wider world. It's a bigger boat than the one that you came from. And I am telling you that if you don't like Christie as a candidate for the Republican nomination in 2016, and I pretty much can tell you right now he has it locked up, I would say it's almost 100% sure he's the only front runner there is. If you don't like him, then you better learn what a true leftist is and what they stand for. And there is no better lesson for you than to look at Mr. de Blasio in New York City, who has had a lifetime of being a progressive. The word progressive is misunderstood. It would probably be better said to be a regressive. Progressives do not believe in individual liberty. Progressives believe that the government should give you your freedom. In other words, they are socialists. They always have been. If you read the literature of Upton Sinclair, which I read when I was a young, impressionable student at Queens College, being brainwashed by communists from Europe, oh, I thought that Upton Sinclair was a great writer. If you were raised on the writings of John Dewey, which I was as a young boy, getting my bachelor's degree, you would say, hey, John Dewey's pretty good, but it turns out John Dewey was a socialist communist. If you have studied people such as Woodrow Wilson, you'll know what a progressive is. They generally share one thing in common. Government is the only instrument of reform. Only government can grant people their liberty. It is the absolute antithesis of everything that I believe in and everything that most of my listeners believe in. And how do you explain then that a throwback like de Blasio, a progressive throwback like de Blasio, who ran as a progressive, which was a reform movement that ran from the late 19th century through the first decades of the 20th century, and was thrown out with yesterday's garbage, how do you explain he won by such a landslide in New York? How? Well, I can give you my opinions. Then let's go across the Hudson River. You have a larger-than-life Rhino Republican, who I call basically a Rockefeller Republican, Chris Christie. And the women love Chris Christie. They want him. They love him. Truists don't like Chris Christie. He's considered another Romney, another McCain. I was attacked last night. Remember, I did this show in another way last night. I was the first one in talk radio to get the results. The others were green with envy, having to wait 20 hours to be able to talk about what I said last night. So I'm going to take it to another level right now. I don't care about the pretentious contempt that we are coming from the lips of people in the media when it reflects upon whether myself or people who won last night. Their pretentious contempt doesn't interest me at all. I know that Christie, although he won last night, is still very much at war with the base of the GOP party. I know that. He moved so far to the left in order to become the governor of New Jersey, second term of governor of New Jersey. He's going to have a lot of trouble moving back to the middle or to the right to win the Republican nomination for president come 2016. I understand that. Remember this. Christie is the only Republican governor who won in one of the most left-wing states in the country, where Barack Obama beat Mitt Romney by 18 points in 2012. How did he do it? Well, in order to win, Christie had to morph close to the values of Obama himself, and he did that. He did things that I find disgusting because he knows better. He backed Al Gore's lying view that global warming is for real, a complete lie, and he knows better. He slammed the NRA. He slammed Senator Rand Paul of Kentucky. He acquiesced to the gay lobby. And all of these issues will come back to haunt him in the primary fight ahead. And woe to all of us who don't want to see another radical leftist progressive take over the country. Because although Christie could be called a liberal Republican, unless you actually know what a real liberal is, you're liable to make the mistake of throwing the baby out with the bathwater. And boy, is this some big baby, and that's an awful lot of bathwater to throw out. And I'm telling you, be very cautious in your contempt of Christie. I don't know him. He holds the same positions of not coming on my show as do Rand Paul and Ted Cruz. So it's not that I know him or I like him or I'm trying to get him on the show. I don't expect any of them to ever come on my show. And frankly, I don't need them. I got where I am with nobody in the political world coming on my show. So how do you explain that? I'm one man with one man's opinion. So I want to ask you a few questions tonight. One of them is, if you voted for de Blasio in New York, why? Why did you vote for de Blasio? What did it? What made him so appealing? There's nothing new in what he's saying. He's saying tax the rich. His entire campaign is tax the rich and let's have fairness. I mean, haven't you heard that before? I think that's about his entire platform is tax the risk. And the state will save you. Freedom to him is the definement of the state. The state giving you your freedom. John Dewey, who I studied as a young undergraduate at Queens College, wrote the following. He said the state has the responsibility for creating institutions under which individuals can effectively realize the potentialities that are there. So what does that mean? It means that the liberals, through social engineering and through laws and imposing social mores upon people, will institute what they consider to be equality. People will not get what they want. They'll get what the government wants. They'll get what the elites want. So that's de Blasio. That's true socialism, progressivism, however you want to define it. Why would you have voted for de Blasio in New York? I want New York to call me. And across the Hudson, I want the folks in New Jersey to tell me, why did you vote for Christie even though he was not conservative enough for you? And then finally, to my national audience on the Savage Nation, which will grow, no doubt, by leaps and bounds come January 1 when I move to drive time on the biggest stations in the country, and I will have a big effect on the midterm elections. No matter what you think of me, it doesn't matter, because as long as you know how to spell Savage, that's all I care about. Everyone's talking about me, and I hope my friend doesn't take offense at this, but an article of mine was to give you some idea of the silent power of the Savage thought. Let me tell it to you like it is. If you want to dismiss me, do so at your own risk. There was an article that was written about me last January on the dangers of the flu vaccine. January 2013 it came out. It was reposted on the Drudge Report yesterday. It got almost a million hits in one day. How could it be that I, a conservative, would attract so many visitors to an article about a health-related topic if I am of no value? If I am of no value whatsoever, Fox News will have unknown talk show hosts on, and they won't have me on, and that's fine. I will never go on Fox News. I don't need them. And obviously, they don't need me. They need a striptease show, and they need a lipstick show. That's what they got. So I don't need the striptease show. I don't need a lipstick show. I don't need a leg crossing. I don't need whatever they have. God bless them. Some of them do wonderful work. But by and large, I exist without anybody in the media. Am I a one-man show? No, I have a pretty good crew of people. But mainly I have my own brain. I have one man's opinion. How do you explain that my article on the dangers of the flu vaccine from 1 year ago attracted almost a million visitors in less than 24 hours on the Drudge Report? How do you explain that? And then I want to go back to what I'm talking about. If you want to dismiss me, do so at your own risk. I will play a major role in the outcome of the midterm elections. I'll play an even major role, with God's will, in the outcome of the next presidential election. Again, dismiss me if you will. It doesn't matter. I want to know why you voted for de Blasio if you're in New York. And I want to now reduce that question, the de Blasio question, to this. I hear the Italians were dancing in the streets of New York. Why? Are you telling me that ethnic politics trumped your common sense? I thought Italian people were largely conservative. Well, no, I never thought that. I used to complain about Jewish liberals for years because I grew up around them, and they used to turn my stomach with their knee-jerk liberalism. I got sick listening to it until I met an Irish friend who said to me, if you think Jewish liberals are bad, you've never met an Irish liberal. And then I started listening to Irish liberals, and I was shocked by what I heard. Then I had an Italian friend who said, if you think that Jewish and Irish liberals are extreme, you've never met an Italian liberal. He said, they go back to Sacco Sacco and Vanzetti, the anarchists. So there's a long streak of anarchism and socialism in many of these ethnic groups in New York City. And apparently, he struck a chord with some of these ethnic groups in New York City. And boy, did he play the race card. You may not know it, but de Blasio is married to a very lovely African-American lady who once wrote a book about her being a lesbian, and how she first fell in love with Mr. de Blasio, the first man she ever dated. And boy, did he use his wife and his children in his campaign. You don't find any of this naked, do you? You don't find any of this slightly upsetting, do you? I think the questions are strong, but they're not the only questions I'm going to talk about tonight. Sure, it's going to be politics. I have a couple of other ones. And I hardly have a minute to lay them out, but I will. I mean, I have more topics than I can possibly handle. But Here we go. I can handle anything when it comes down to it. You ready for this one? In Colorado, the voters approved a 25% tax on recreational marijuana. Do you approve or disapprove of taxing dope? I'll be right back.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
I've spoken throughout this campaign about a tale of two cities. That inequality, that feeling of a few doing very well, while so many flip further behind. That is demagoguery, Bill.
That is demagoguery going back to the French Revolution. You have stepped into the shoes of every demagogue going back to Julius Caesar, de Blasio. You don't fool anybody for a minute. Anybody with an IQ over 19 can read right through this pitch, which is get the rich. Take away their shoes. Take away their suits. Take away their cars. Throw them out of their apartments. Great. We heard it all before. It worked real well in Russia. Tyrone on WABC, you voted for de Blasio. Tell us why you're on the Savage Nation. Thanks for calling.
I voted for de Blasio because the stop and frisk tactics from Bloomberg was horrible. So anything that's the opposite from that, a lot.
Now, what do you mean it was horrible? Wasn't crime at an all-time low under the stop and frisk program that the NYPD was following?
Yeah, the crime was low. But for those who wasn't committing crimes, then you could just be walking down a block and the cops will stop you, search you, frisk you.
I'm a white guy, and when I was a kid growing up in Queens, I remember the cops in my neighborhood would stop us because we looked like punks, and they'd frisk us. Everyone thought it was a good idea because there were some bad people walking around with guns, and most New Yorkers liked stop and frisk.
Well, most New Yorkers in New York City, but outside the other boroughs in the Bronx.
So what would you say, my friend Tyrone, if the crime starts to go up again and these punks who are no longer being stopped and frisked but allowed to go out and go and risk start holding up people, beating them up and whatnot? What are you going to do then?
And that's horrible. I understand.
All right, you're a reasonable man, but I think he appealed to the basest instincts in you.
Savage.
Inequality in New York is not something that only threatens those who are struggling. The stakes are so high for every New Yorker, and making sure no son or daughter of New York falls behind.
Oh, right. We heard this before. Right. Yeah, the magic wand. Every poor child's going to be rich under de Blasio, and every rich child's going to be poor under de Blasio. I mean, you've heard this before. We've read it before. Read Madame Defarge, read the French Revolution. Just keep promising the morons that they can have what the other man worked for, and you'll get very far in life. We've seen it with Obama on a minor scale. You've seen nothing yet. Wait until de Blasio warms up. Now, this has nothing to do with de Blasio. It's a little diversion. I know many of you enjoy hearing this, but and this has nothing to do with de Blasio, but I've taken a liking to what I call Guido suits. They're velour warm-up suits. And I've ordered, I can't find them on the West Coast. They don't ship them west of the Hudson River for some reason. I had to search the internet. I found an old one in the closet that I bought many years ago, and I found out it's easier than selecting clothing every day. Put it on, so I couldn't find the pair. I tried Macy's, no one had them. I found the company in Brooklyn. It took an Orthodox Jew to tell me, I got plenty of, I don't know where he got them from. He had boxes of them in my size with the right label on. Don't take a large. Guy your size, you need a medium. And he was right. So I bought it on the internet. It was expensive. I couldn't wait. I figured three things would happen. It would arrive in tattered. It would be used and refurbished. There'd be a disease in the box with the suit. My credit card would be purged by someone. None of that happened. The thing arrived and it fit perfect. So I called him up today. I said, Mike, what can I? And I ordered another one in black today. And I say it has nothing to do with de Blasio, but the thing is I love these suits. They're unbelievable. And they're wonderful for doing radio, and I got to tell you. And number two, if you listen to the show, you know, last night I was live in the city at KSFO in the radio station, and everyone said it sounded like you were having fun. This is how I raced in rush hour, had to dodge this, got the pizza, the hands blew up, the legs blew up. I hate eating pizza, yet I love eating pizza. It's my favorite food, and it makes me sick. My joints hurt. My ankles blow up. And I say never again. Every bite is delicious, and it's poison. As my great friend Dr. Cathcart taught me many, many decades ago, he said, we are addicted to that which hurts us the most. That's whether it's food or sex. Whatever we're more addicted to, whatever we love the most, we're addicted to, makes us sick. It's true. Whether it's a pizza or a you-know-what. So I'm not in the city tonight staring across at the two handsome faces that I saw last night. No, I'm now back in a room wearing my Guido suit, staring at a blank curtain in a room somewhere in a remote. I'm 3 feet from a heavy green curtain wearing a light blue velour tracksuit. And I'm looking at the world in a different set of eyes. New York went crazy out of hatred for those who have more. Those who drive around in better cars must have stolen it from the man with a squeegee in his hand. Those who get the prettier women, they didn't deserve the prettier women because they're smarter and provide better. No, they stole that woman from the downtrodden creep with a bad job. Those who live in the nice apartments in Manhattan, they don't deserve them. They stole them from the workers, the strap hangers. At least that's what they believe. 855-407-282. Why would you vote for a guy like de Blasio? I mean, I know how he won. There was no one running against him. He was invisible. Do you remember this campaign? I'm not even in New York. I remember it. Do you remember who was running way ahead of him? The deviant, perverted psycho from Queens or Brooklyn was way ahead of him. No one ever heard of de Blasio. But the perv blew up his campaign. And then all of a sudden, this guy comes out of nowhere. And now New York's going to be stuck with him. But yet there are people who actually believe him. Jose on WABC, you voted for de Blasio. Please tell America why.
There's too many stop and frisks over here. People stop and frisking and too much persecution of the same-sex relationships and stuff.
Now, were you personally stopped and frisked?
Absolutely. They frisk me all the time. They make minorities are late to work all the time, being frisked all the time. I say.
So you mean every minority was frisked in New York?
What?
Every minority was frisked all the time in New York?
It's all recorded. It's on the nightly news, on the ABC News.
Well, because the nightly news are a bunch of demagogues who want to stir up the masses against the white people in the city. You know that. It's a race war. You know what the media is built upon. The media is built upon race war. The media has a couple of mottos. If it burns, it earns. If you can stir up one race against the other, people will listen to you. So you don't understand that? Now, how do you explain that the crime went down with stop and frisk? How do you explain that?
There's a bunch of fat cats living in $150 million apartments. They don't pay any taxes.
Jose, how do you explain that the stop and frisk campaign by the NYPD reduced violent crime in the city? How do you explain that away?
These statistics are all fabricated by the Republicans.
No, you have it backwards, as you will soon find out. De Blasio twisted the statistics and made you think that it was all a lie. That psychotic liberal Judge Scheindlin is an example of everything that is wrong with America. An activist, left-wing, fanatic judge says it's illegal, and she twists the statistics to pander to the minorities. Don't you understand that politicians are not to be trusted, that you gotta judge things by how they are in the street, on the elbow-thrashing level of life. Not by what you hear from the liars on a podium. Jose, you're going to see with your own eyes over the next months and years whether the statistics about stop and frisk were right and wrong. I will tell you this. Right after stop and frisk was ended by Judge Fanatic Scheindlin, African-American women in Bed-Stuy, African-American women who are raising children on their own came out against her. And they said, why did she do that? We are in favor of it. Our children are going to be in danger from the punks who have guns. We want stop and frisk to come back. But de Blasio didn't tell you that. The Daily News didn't tell you that. The Daily News features any story that panders to your prejudices to sell a paper. That's my opinion. So the questions remain, why did you vote for de Blasio or Christie? The bigger question for the nation is, would you rather have a moderate, middle-of-the-road Republican like Christie in 2016 or Hillary Clinton? My position is, he is a rhino. I don't like rhinos. but I'd rather have 50% on the dollar than zero on the dollar. Number one, I don't believe Ted Cruz can ever win a national election. In fact, I will tell you right now, I would bet $10 million he could never win a national election. I would bet every dime I have that he could never win a national election. Now, many of you are going to find this contemptuous because you've been misled to believe that he's a national figure. I hope that I'm wrong. How's that? I hope that I'm wrong. I hope that I'm wrong, and I hope that he wins, and I hope he's a national figure. I would say that I'd bet $10 million he could never get there, ever. That's number three. Then the other topic is the marijuana topic. I love what Colorado did. The voters approved a 25% tax on recreational marijuana. And the first $40 million in revenue will go to public schools. It was approved by voters yesterday. Governor John Hickenlooper said, "The move showed a willingness on the part of Colorado voters to tax marijuana for the public benefit, even as they roundly defeated a broader tax measure that would have increased state income taxes to raise $1 billion for schools." So the people of Colorado, who are very liberal, said, "We don't want higher state income tax, but we want to tax the drug addicts who smoke marijuana." The same should be done in California. It should be taxed, and the state tax should be lowered to 8%, Mr. Brown. Governor Jerry Brown, if you want to truly be a bipartisan governor and be remembered for being a bipartisan governor and get reelected until you're 150, Governor Brown, tax marijuana and lower the state income tax to 7 or 8%. And I'll throw another kicker in there, since you're listening to me so carefully right now, everybody who listens to me so carefully right now, since there's no ball game and no one else to listen to but me. Yesterday, actually, no, today's Wednesday. I was supposed to take the day off. I had an appointment about 40 miles north of here in Santa Rosa, California. Then I found out from one of my assistants that I shouldn't go today because they opened a gambling casino up in a town about 20 miles, on the halfway there. And he said, "You're going to get caught. You'll never get past the traffic." And lo and behold, they opened the casino yesterday, and some losers lined up at 3 o'clock in the morning outside this Indian gambling casino. Indian gambling casino. Like, I'm an Indian, I could open one. I love it, the word Indian casino. Everyone knows what a sham that is. They came by car, by bus, by wheelchair, and by walker to place the first bets at the casino near Rohnert Park. This casino was on the size of a Las Vegas-sized casino within 30 miles of San Francisco. 254 acres, $800 million, 13 restaurants, 144 tables, 3,000 slot machines, 43 minutes from the San Francisco Bay. 78 blackjack tables for the losers. And so they opened the casino. And who do you think swarmed in there on opening day? Was it a truck driver? No, he was driving a truck. Was it a carpenter? No, he was planing wood. Was it a plumber? No, he was plumbing pipes. Was it a word processor? No, she was processing words. So who went into that casino? Why, if you actually study these things, you find out that it's largely people on welfare who swarm the casinos with government checks. They get the government checks and they throw them into the slot machine. Isn't that a nice system? Isn't that wonderful? So if the fools want to gamble their life savings away, I say tax the Indian casinos. For the life of me, I don't understand why states don't tax Indian gambling casinos. Can somebody explain that to me? Tax marijuana, tax Indian gambling casinos at a reasonable rate like all of us pay, lower state income tax to 6 or 7%, and everybody wins. Do you agree or disagree with that idea, and tell me why? I want the answer. I'm not a fanatic. I want your answers on these questions. I want the dialogue to be had. Should marijuana be taxed as it is in Colorado? That's a no-brainer. Yes. Should Indian gambling casinos be taxed? Duh. Why not? Why? I don't understand that. 855-400-7282. I have many people who don't like Christie, and they're going to tell us why. Where's the one you said I should take from the local KSFO? Here we go. Steve on KSFO, thank you. What's on your mind? Go ahead, please. Steve. Steve going, what? Hey, man, do I have a hundred million? Steve, number two. Steve is not here. He hung up. He was a fanatic who got excited and had to go out and get a new box of the pens while waiting to get up on the air. he was ready to attack me. He got so excited that he went through the whole box that he bought this afternoon at 3 o'clock. Oh, boy. Here we go. WMAL. I love the call letters of radio stations. I can say them in my sleep. We say certain acronyms are so exciting. I learned from somebody at Cumulus yesterday where the acronym WLS in Chicago came from. I had no idea. I've been in the business 20 years this March. You know, like radio stations, you think they make them up out of the air. Like Chicago has a monster station, WLS, owned by Cumulus, which I'll be on for the first time. I said, where did that come from? He said, world's largest store. At the time, it was Sears. That was W. I had no idea. I mean, you learn things, and I find it fascinating. You got to love radio to understand what I'm saying. I hit the wrong button. I closed three tabs. My screen just shut down. KSFO, Jason, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, I was going to say, Dr. Savage, I have a new name for de Blasio. His name should be Fugazio, you know, like
Now, wait, hold it. Is that a dirty word in Italian?
I don't think so.
Wait, we don't know. We can't use words like that. I don't know what it means.
You know, like...
I'm sure it's... I don't know what it means. Oh, Fugazi is a I get it. I remember now. Fugazi is a fake jewel, fake diamond.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, so that's very good. What, Fugazi? Jason, how'd you figure that out?
I don't know. I thought I was going to call yesterday with it, but then some...
Oh, no, that's hilarious. I think you got the winning prize. I know he's a Fugazi. I absolutely know that he's not going to do anything that he promised the poor. What's he going to give the poor that he can get? What can he do to make them happy? Tell me. Is he going to give away apartments on the Upper East Side in a lottery?
Well, I doubt it.
So what's he going to do for the poor? He's going to institute a new income tax on the people in New York City. They did that back in the 1950s, and people moved to Connecticut because of that.
Well, you know, I don't think he's going to... He's going to just make the situation worse than Bloomberg is.
Yeah, he'll turn one race against the other. Crime will go through the ceiling. That's my fear, not my hope. By the way, I hope I'm wrong. I hope that we can see that progressives know how to run a city. Here in San Francisco, I'll show you what a progressive city is like. After I got off the air last night in San Francisco, which is down to the south of Market, you know, it's a booming area. There are cranes everywhere building. And there's big internet, young, blah, 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 blah. Very interesting to watch. After the show, I jumped in the car. We went over to an area I've been going to since I moved here. The reason I moved here was because of the Italian-Chinese area of North Beach Chinatown. I just took to it right away. It's my favorite town in the whole world is the Italian district. The architecture is from, I think it's from the post-earthquake. Obviously, it has to be that. It's very charming, low-rise, and it butts up against the financial center with the high-rises. And it meets Chinatown as Little Italy used to meet Chinatown. It's very interesting, by the way. I went over there last night. I was going to grab some cheap Chinese food. My luck, it was Tuesday night, and the one greasy Chinese joint that I haven't been in years was closed. It's only closed on Tuesday nights. So I wound up walking in the dark streets. Here's what I'm getting at. Here's a progressive city. You have never seen garbage like you've seen in San Francisco. It's a national disgrace. This is a progressive city that you can puke from. Oh, you can look at the ferries and the cable can, you know, bring me to a hill. You look at all of the propaganda, but you go walk in the streets and look at the filth in San Francisco. You can get sick from what progressives have done to this city. The garbage outside of the Bank of America on Columbus Avenue in North Beach is something that you would not see in a third world city today. There's not a major city in the third world that would look as dirty as San Francisco does under liberals. That's all I can tell you. And I will tell you this. To prove my point, I am going to have my assistant start taking pictures of the dirtiest streets in the city and put them up on michaelsavage.com. You'll be appalled at what you see. It'll be the opposite of what you're being told you're going to get from the de Blasio of the West. I'll be right back.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
Tackling inequality isn't easy. It never has been and it never will be. The challenges we face have been decades in the making. And the problems we set out to address...
It was simple. Get the guillotines running. The French had the guillotines to straighten out inequality in Paris and... other cities. They tried the guillotines. How'd that work out? Many countries wanted inequality eliminated. They tried it in Venezuela. That worked out real well. Straightening out inequality. That worked real well for the Cubans. Take a look at that. I mean, de Blasio has a very interesting message. It worked out very well in France during the French Revolution. It worked out very well for the Cubans under Fidel Castro. I'm sure it'll work out very well for the New Yorkers. By the way, Bill de Blasio, he has three different legal names. He says that it's a city, a tale of two cities, but apparently he has a personal tale of three names, according to the Daily News. Are you ready for this? Do you know that his real name is Warren Wilhelm Jr.? Wilhelm Jr.? How could that be? The man who became the city's 109th mayor was born Warren Wilhelm Jr. on May 8, 1961 in Manhattan. In 1983, fresh out of NYU, where else? Where else would a good progressive come from but NYU? He petitioned a Manhattan judge to formally change his name to Warren de Blasio Wilhelm, according to legal records. And in December 2001, he petitioned the judge in Brooklyn to formally change his name again, this time to Bill de Blasio. In recent years, the candidates have time, blah, 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 Daily News Examiner, court records, blah, 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 read it yourself. The news contacted de Blasio's older brother, Stephen Wilhelm, 65, a journalist in Seattle, to ask about his siblings' identities, and he said, I need to check with the campaign, Wilhelm said. The campaign subsequently said Wilhelm would not be made available for comment. It's funny because I like the name Wilhelm. In fact, I named my Mercedes Wilhelm. Remember a few years ago? If you read my novel, Abuse of Power, Jack's car, Jack's Mercedes, the big V12, he affectionately pats it on the dashboard when he hits the pedal to the metal, and he says, go, Wilhelm, go. So I have nothing against Germanic names. Don't get me wrong. I like the Saxon names. But, hey, the name Fugazi really works. Fugazio. It
join
really
the
works.
Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-7282.
You're just a dumb, stupid peasant slave that works for me, paying taxes.
No.
You're like the bees in a hive.
Yeah.
You make the honey and I steal it. And I put it in jars and use it any way I want. And you little bees, you keep making that honey.
Bees in the trap. Bees in the trap.
You bees keep making that honey. You work for me, Barack Obama, so I can go on vacation and spit on you. I can go wherever I want and spit on you with my haughty demeanor. And I'll get away with it because there is no press and there is no Republican Party.
On the Savage Nation. Weeknights at 6 on Hot Talk 560 KSFO. Warning, the Savage Nation contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised. And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, the Savage Nation. And here he is, Michael Savage.
I've spoken throughout this campaign about a tale of two cities. That inequality, that feeling of a few doing very well, while so many slip further behind. That is the defining challenge of our times.
I love politics. I don't know what I would do without it, because it's the most interesting thing in the world when you see such incredible lies being sold as truth, and the morons eat it up. They gobble it up. They gobble it up. They drink from the cup of deceit. I've never seen anything like this. The people really are dumb. The average person in New York proves once again that New Yorkers are the stupidest people in America with the worst egos. They have contempt for everyone outside of New York, and they don't understand they're a laughingstock. They're the most provincial people on the planet. They have megalomania about their own city, which they had nothing to do with, and yet they are jealous of those who built the city. It's fabulous. It's just fabulous. Let's see what old Fugazi, the Bostonian, does for them. Play Staying Alive again. I want to hear what's coming next. I don't know whether he's just a demagogue. That we can tell. Fugazio is certainly a demagogue. He's not the only one in politics. He appeals to the prejudices and hatreds of the population. He foments social discontent in order to further his own political ambitions. He is the dictionary definition of a demagogue. Do you understand this? You can't call him a martinet yet because we don't know his management style. We don't know whether he's a martinet. But we do know that he's a demagogue, that's for sure. Unbelievable to me. I had no idea who the guy was. I never heard of him until yesterday. Never. Never. I mean, I'm used to demagoguery from Obama. That we understand. But this guy takes it to a whole lower level. Not a higher level, a lower level. So now all of the people are saying, I voted for him because I didn't like stop and frisk. That had become an issue. So he appealed to the black people and the Hispanic people. And it made it sound like elitist cops were frisking only black guys and Hispanic guys. And they were doing it based on race, not based on crime statistics and areas in which they were being frisked. They made it sound as though cops were breaking into middle class African-American homes and frisking people on their stoop. And, of course, the people on the bottom bought it. They wanted to get the rich. Well, we'll see what happens. We'll see if Wall Street changes their ways. Now, if de Blasio or Fugazi or Wilhelm, whatever he wants to be called, comes out and says, you know what, I'm going to reintroduce the uptick rule, and I'm going to put my money where my campaign was. I'm reintroducing the uptick rule because I read about it in Michael Savage's book, Trickle Down. One is Trickle Up, one is Trickle Down. I can't remember. Poverty. Trickle Down Poverty. I was yelling from rooftops, reintroduce the uptick rule. Rein in Wall Street. The uptick rule, which I'm not going to explain to you, would stop the crazy speculation on Wall Street that's going to lead to the next collapse. It was eliminated by Mr. Rubin, the fly fisherman that Bill Clinton hired from Goldman Sachs to be the Treasury Secretary. Where else? Just watch Boardwalk Empire. You'll know how everything works. It's amazing how life imitates art and art imitates life. I initially didn't like Boardwalk Empire on HBO. I didn't like him in the role of the heavy, the guy with the funny voice. I don't know his name even. I always forget. He's a very fine actor. I forget who plays the heavy. What's his name? The Shammy. Steve the Shammy. Shammy Miami. Steve the Shammy. I didn't like him with in the beginning. Are you kidding? He's the heavy guy from New Jersey, from Atlantic City. But he came into the part. In the last episode, they had him hitting someone in the face with a cane. They gave him a little violence to add to it. But I thought it diminished from his role because he's not the kind of guy who is the muscle. He was the brains. And a guy with brains doesn't hit anyone in the face with a cane. But having said that, I watch the show now and I love it because in my mind, it's so cynical. The view of politics in this HBO show, Boardwalk Empire, is exquisitely cynical as to what politics is. They show you Republicans and Democrats alike behind closed doors, cutting up the pie and deciding how they're going to basically rape the public. Or in a more polite way, I'll use another word, how they're going to mulct the public. M-U-L-C-T, a word that isn't used much anymore. But since I speak more than 50 words of English, go look it up. They go into a room and they decide how they're going to mulct the public, and mulct they do. And so now we have in New York a guy comes along, no one heard of him, he's been around forever, grew up in Boston under the name Wilhelm, changed his name to Wilhelm de Blasio, now he's de Blasio, and now suddenly everyone loves him, and he's going to give to the poor what they don't have, because the poor, as you know, when they were riding on a subway, and I was once poor riding on a subway car, I funnily, as an immigrant son, didn't hate the rich. I wanted to be like them. How does that work out? I wanted to be the woman in the car. I'll never figure out. Could I tell you a turning point in my life? The day I left New York, or within a few months when I left New York. Do you know when? I was a struggling teacher or social worker. I don't know which. I was making next to nothing, living in a crappy apartment and riding the subway. My raincoat smelled of the subway. I hated it at night. I even wrote a poem, "When I Come Home at Night, My Raincoat, It Smells of the Subway." It was a great poem, by the way. Those early poems were really nice. You know, I could even to this day feel the car rattling, the older cars. And I used to go between the cars to grab air. I used to get claustrophobic in a subway car. I hated it. There was nothing romantic about the subway cars. I don't know what people from Duluth come there. They think subways are cool. They're out in the club, 4 a.m, stoned on ecstasy. They think that they're a movie star because they're ripped out of their mind. And then they fall down an elevator shaft to get raped 3 a.m, and they don't know why it happened. They thought it was a party they were at and a picnic. I didn't find it a picnic. I struggled. So I'm on the subway car with the coat, da-da-da. And the point is, it was not very pleasant. But I remember I was coming from my job in Manhattan, and there was, in those days, the rich old ladies would come in from their apartments on Park Avenue in their Rolls, in their Royces, their Rolls Royce, the chauffeur, and they all had a little blanket that they had on the rear passenger shelf. I kind of liked the blanket. I didn't understand exactly why. I was schlepping in the cold and the dirt and the slush, and these elegant old ladies would be dropped off at their banks and their clubs and their lunches and the Rolls. I didn't sit there seething, saying, kill her, take her Rolls, grab her diamonds. I thought how nice that would be, to be having a Rolls Royce with a driver and a blanket taking me to lunch. But that's not what did it. I'll tell you what did it. I was working for about $5,800 a year. I don't remember what the number was. It was just starvation wages. Now, remember, I was a college graduate. It's all I could get. Okay? And I'll never forget, as long as I live, it was an ad, a billboard ad that was in Manhattan on the side of buildings. And it said that a woman works hard. I think that, let me see if I can remember the number right. I don't want to get the number wrong. A woman works hard for her $400,000. And it showed that she banked at a certain bank. I think it was Chase Manhattan. I don't remember what it was. And it showed like a middle-aged woman, gray hair, worked hard for her $400,000. That number, it could have been $40,000. I don't actually remember. A woman works hard for her $400,000 or $40,000. It was beyond anything I could ever in my life imagine saving. And I said, I've got to get out of this city because I'll never be able to make a dime here. I can't get ahead. There's no way. Every door was closed to me. I had no family connections. Nothing. I had nothing working for me. So anyway, the rest is history. I've worked every day of my life. I've done well. I'm still working when I don't have to, and I could have stopped a long time ago, because to me, politics is almost my lifeblood. And, of course, the other stuff I do. The health stuff is awesome. I'm going to do a lot more of it as time goes on. People apparently really like it. They want someone to tell them a different viewpoint than the what they're getting from the drug companies and the and whatever. There's a different viewpoint. I spent many years in that field. So that's when I left New York. But I didn't leave because I hated the rich, is my point. I didn't leave saying, oh, I hate that rich woman in the Rolls Royce. I didn't leave because I thought that that woman on the billboard with the gray hair with the $40,000 or $400,000 was an evil person. I thought, how am I ever going to get there? How am I going to do it? I didn't know how I would do it. I didn't know if I would do it. All I knew was is that I had to get out of New York in order to break free of it, in order to break free of the social structure, the social strictures, rather, of Manhattan in those days. I'll never forget them as long as I lived. It may as well have been Calcutta with the untouchables. That's how I felt. I felt as though I was an untouchable in Manhattan, one of the untouchables. And I left. I changed my life. So what I'm getting at is, you don't have to hate people who have more than you. All you have to do is want what they have and work for it. But apparently the new mayor of New York, Wilhelm, thinks otherwise. And look how it worked for him. It's worked for Mussolini. It worked for Obama. It worked for Madame Defarge. It worked for Lenin. It worked for Trotsky. I mean, why shouldn't it work for him? But we'll see tomorrow what it will bring. He's promising. He's promising basically what the demagogues of the past have promised. Chavez, let's use Chavez as a closer role model. How did that work out for the people in Venezuela? How'd that work out? I always mix up the countries. I'm always mixing up Argentina with Venezuela. To me, anything south of the border is one blur. In that sense, maybe I'm a little, a little too regional here. New Yorkers think that there's no world outside the Hudson River. I don't, to me, I don't want to go there. I love my country. It's enough for me already. I had enough world travels, traveling the world, living in horrible cesspools of the third world, enough to know I never want to be there again. Yeah. 20 years of living in villages and doing the plant collecting for the sake of humanity. No running water, no toilets, no English spoken here. It was a real romantic dream. I don't want it anymore. But the fact of the matter is, how did that work out for the people of the country where old Chavez promised exactly the same as de Blasio is promising the poor? Tell me how that worked out. Their healthcare system is a disaster. It's been hit by an atom bomb. The middle class has been fleeing since that. Well, he's dead, of course. Thank God he went to his reward. He crossed the river, you know, Styx. That's where he belongs. It was where he always belongs. He came from there. He went back where he came from, that wonderful South American dictator. But his policies are being continued by one of his proteges. How's that working out for the people of that country? Many of you listen to this show. many of you call this show from Miami and elsewhere. You fled the very same thing that is now being instituted by Obama and de Blasio. I'll be right back.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
The politics are challenging for the Speaker and others, and we want to make it as easy for them as possible. This is not an issue where we're looking for a political win. This is one where we're looking for a substantive win for the U.S. economy. We have a fascinating cross-section of people, some unlikely bedfellows, some very liberal folks, some very conservative folks, who all believe that now's the time to get this done. Altogether, these businesses are going to have more customers.
That's Obama, the demagogue, talking about having enough of the thieves together to pass amnesty for the illegal aliens, mainly for the lower wages that they will bring and the higher profits. So we can talk about that another time. I'm trying to tell you what they're doing behind the scenes. There's three topics tonight. Election results, casino opening in California. Do you think Indian casinos should be taxed? Marijuana tax in Colorado passed to 25%. That's a good idea. Why shouldn't it be taxed across America? Why not? Alcohol is taxed. Tobacco is taxed. Why should, what is marijuana different? And what about driving while stoned? I don't get it. How about me having to smell that crap? It's called dope for a reason. I hate the smell of it. It's disgusting. Every time I walk in downtown San Francisco, these filthy bums are smoking the medical marijuana. I don't like it. I find it makes me allergic, okay? Why do I have to put up with their filthy secondhand smoke? Why? Because this is what liberalism is. It's a twisted lie from top to bottom. Oh, it's medical marijuana. Oh, it's medical. So therefore, I have to put up with the guy's secondhand smoke, which I could puke from? How about all of the kids driving around stoned on marijuana, or driving boats or riding bicycles through intersections and running people over on marijuana? That's okay because it's medical marijuana? See, you have to understand what this is all about. That's what it's all about. Now, in New York, this guy Fugazio, who won, his real name, of course, is it's important. How could a guy have a name like that's a Germanic name and run as an Italian? It's amazing. Look, you talk about stupid people. That was his road to success? Unbelievable. So now he's acting like he has a 718 area code rather than a 212 area code. That's a local joke. I mean, you have to live in New York to understand that. This guy's about as much 718 as I am. He's a real 718 for sure. That's, of course, what's that? Not an area code for Brooklyn. But no, he's 212 as sure as I'm sitting here. He's actually not even 212. His real area code is 617 because he's from Boston. You know, this is not a bad way to play games here. It's like, is he a 617, a 718, a 415? You know, you can play with numbers on this. Anything to entertain yourself. You can go crazy from it after a while. We haven't even done Christie tonight. I tried to tell you what the progressive movement was, and you fell asleep. I tried to tell you they opened up a fake Indian gambling casino here the size of Las Vegas and closed down highways. And I had to alter my... It's lucky for you because I didn't go to my appointment. I came on the air tonight. I was afraid to get on the highway to go north. $800 million. 254-acre Indian gambling casino. 3,000 slot machines for all the welfare recipients with streaming waterfalls, modern decor, and 78 blackjack tables in the middle of the day. You hear this? Can you believe this? Packed, they couldn't, they were beating them out of, away in wheelchairs and walking canes, and transfusion trees were flying. These are all of the recipients coming to throw the money down the toilet there. Where does it all go? Why aren't they taxed like I am if I run a business? I have to pay the state a tax. Well, why? I don't understand it. Can an Indian call a show and tell me why it shouldn't be taxed?
Join Is there an the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-7282. Savage.
Hot Talk 560.
Well, let's go back to the issue. You want to have fun. You want to get serious. You want to be smart. You want to be right. Which way do you want it? See, that's an interesting statement I want to make to all of the wonderful purists who listen to me and now hate me because I said that you better compromise or you're going to lose every election. Do you want to be smart? Huh? Or do you want to be right? You know, a guy once said that to me when I was about 40 years old. I got so mad at him. It seethed inside of me. He was a smart New York lawyer. I'll never forget it as long as I live. Some lawyers are really smart. Let's be, you know, they're really smart. and I was fuming over something that was done to me, and I wanted to sue them. I wanted to go at it straight out. And the lawyer said to me, you want to be right or you want to be smart? I got so mad at him because I wanted to be both. But very often you can't be right and smart. You understand that? And that's what I'm telling you. Don't be so quick to throw out the baby with the bathwater on a Republican who can win an election. Sure, they're going to screw you on most of the big things. But maybe on national defense wouldn't be as compromised as it is under Barack Obama. Maybe we wouldn't see a purge of the generals, which all of the great liberals who love America so much are suddenly ignorant of. Maybe we wouldn't be flooded with illegal aliens if we had gotten a Republican in who was even halfway something that we wanted. Maybe we wouldn't be talking about amnesty right now. Instead, we got the opposite of everything we wanted. Don't you understand what I'm saying to you? You want to be right or you want to be smart? And then there's the other topics. The marijuana. They taxed it in Colorado, 25%. Sounds, hey, California, tax marijuana and reduce income tax to 8%. Then Governor Brown goes down in history as the greatest bipartisan governor in history. Everybody wins. Why, the pot smokers shouldn't be taxed? Why? Why shouldn't they be taxed? Give me an example. Why shouldn't they be taxed? The dope heads. Blaine, WMAL, do you think marijuana should be taxed across America?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I feel like we could solve a lot of problems in the country if we would just legalize pot and tax it. You know,
let me explain why I'm opposed to legalizing pot. While I believe there's a difference between legalizing and decriminalizing, it's two different things. Let me tell you where this whole medical marijuana charade came from. It came from George Soros. People think I'm making this up. I fought this fight 10 years ago against one of his cohorts. They spent $1 million in California and $1 million in Arizona to put medical marijuana on the ballot. That's how they put the camel's nose into the tent. So let's put that aside. A lot of people are very weak-minded. They have no creativity, and they need marijuana to make them think that they're, you know, jazz musicians. But basically, they're not creative. Everyone I know who's super creative or super intelligent hates marijuana. If you have a Stradivarius for a brain, you don't smoke marijuana. If you're cursed with a banjo for a brain, the marijuana makes you think that you're playing a violin. Thanks for the call. Now, let's go back to de Blasio. The man talks the talk, but will he walk the walk? And I want to now get down to brass tacks. It's going to be boring. I warn you. See, when I get into the real heavy stuff that I write about, it's boring. You want me to just talk, I can talk. But if you want me to walk, I can walk. I said that if de Blasio really meant that he was going to make the city equal, so there's no longer the super rich and the super poor, which is bull. Read the Bible. It says, the poor will be with us forever. They're usually pretty right in the Bible. The old guys knew it was coming. Not exactly those words. The poor will be with us forever. You're telling me those bums laying in San Francisco on cardboard down by the ferry terminal puking on themselves and using dope all day are there because I put them there? I've been working every day of my life since I'm 5 years old. I didn't put those creeps there. I put them in a work camp if it was up to me. I take the drugs away from clean the puke off the gutter. I make them bums sweep instead of me having to step over their garbage. That's the kind of mayor I would be. But okay, you don't want to hear that. Instead, you want to hear the Fugazi talk. All right, so you got the Fugazi talk. You want to read Dreams from My Father by Obama and wake up to a Nightmare from My Father by Obama. You look up, in my book, Trickle Up Poverty, it was a huge bestseller because it was a great book. It was exhausting to research and write it. The uptick rule is what Mr. Wilhelm de Blasio should reinstitute in New York. If he really means what he says about straightening out, you know, the inequality, all of the shirtwaist triangle fire, you know, commies, inequality, I'm going to march with the lock arm in arm, inequality. Let's straighten out inequality. They rush back to their condos. They lock their doors and they load their salami. They have like assault salamis in their apartment. If someone breaks in, don't worry, Mildred. I got us an assault salami here. It's 20 years old. It's as hard as a bat. If you look up Nightmare on Wall Street inside my book, you will see what I mean by the uptick rule. I'm not going to read it to you. You understand it was eliminated by Bill Clinton in order to schmear off, get back the schmear job from Wall Street. You want to really straighten things out, you go back to the uptick rule. That's number one. It was eliminated in order to let wild, crazed speculation rule the day on Wall Street. And I'm telling you, it has to happen. The uptick rule, you know what it would do? Would halt the trading of a stock whose price declines by 10% in a single day. You get it? Now, what would that do? It would stop wild speculation and might stop the next blowout like we had in 2008. But if you really think de Blasio is going to do that, I got another guess coming for you. There's another issue of treachery that I have to point out to you. If I read to you the names of the individuals who eliminated the uptick rule, they would ring a bell to you. What's the point of reading it to you? What, are you going to get excited? You're going to write it down somewhere? You're going to put it inside a pie? You're going to knit it into a sweater? We go back to the housing crisis and TARP bailouts. Ancient history, right? It's all related to this. It's all related to this. And again, if Mr. de Blasio really wants to straighten out any inequality in New York, alleged inequality based upon, you know, finagling, reinstitute the uptick rule. Let's start with that. And he can save the economy from another blowout. He's not going to do that. He's going to continue to tell you he's going to do it, but he's never going to do that because Wall Street would never permit him to do it. And that's it. That's all. Now what? Now what do you want to talk about? Indian casinos. They opened one up here. I don't know if I could ever go north again. I hate going north anyway. You know, like in certain cities where you live, you don't go certain areas. Like, I know where to go and what. It's like, I don't go north of where I live. You know what I'm saying? Like, if you live in New York, you don't go north of 25. You say, stop. Like, you do go north of Highway 25. You don't want to go south of Highway 25. Because if you get into Wallbanger's neighborhood, it's very dangerous. You can get run over or beaten up by the thugs if you go south of 25A. No, it's just a joke. But I'm saying, it's the same here in the Bay Area. It's like, I don't like to go north of, if you don't live here, you don't know what I'm saying. North of San Rafael is like no man's land to me. It's like, what's up there? I don't even know. It's horrible. It's nothing but cars and... It's like if I was a cartoonist, I would just paint a picture of gridlock on the highway north of like this town, San Rafael. Now, that's the casino is about 15 miles north of that. Can you imagine? I have to go for an appointment 15 miles north of the north of the casino. I was afraid to go on the highway. They can't keep the people away from the casino there. They want to throw their money down the toilet. The gamblers, they want to go for some culture from Native American culture. Now, don't think I'm bashing Native Americans. Let's start with that. I wrote a book, 1972, published, my first book. I put my heart and soul into it. I researched it for years called Earth Medicine, Earth Foods. It's a classic book. It's a beautiful book. And I steeped myself in Native American lore to the point where I almost lost my own cultural identity while writing it. That's how deeply I became enmeshed in Native American folklore and such. And I've always been, you know, anthropologically oriented. It's an interesting story. But what the heck does that have to do with the Indian gambling casino? Are you telling me that the tribes really benefit from it? And if they do, why don't they pay taxes? Can anyone explain that to me? How did it come out that tribes don't pay taxes? I knew an officer of the law in Southern California near San Diego who worked hard all his life, and he told me that he had to patrol the Indian reservation, and everyone on that reservation got $90,000 a year from the government, each and every child, man, and woman. Would you believe this? Is that fair? I mean, is that fairness? I don't get it. Okay, well, you know, no one's calling on it. It's like the little man went to sleep in the chair on that. I get it. It's already too late for this. They can't balance it. They enjoyed the Fugazio. The Christie's already shot. It's over. I have to do something else tomorrow. The marijuana is not a bad topic. I think that's a pretty good one. It'll last. I'm getting someone who called up about the tribal. Thank God I'm going to get a legitimate answer. Thank God. It's about the Indian casino. Should they be taxed? We're having a discussion. Thank God we don't have to talk about Fugazi politicians. Salem, Oregon, on the station called KYKS. Todd, welcome. Thank you for listening. What's on your mind?
Hi, I'm very honored to speak with you, Dr. Savage.
Listen, I'm not one of those hosts who want you to say that, but thank you very much, but you needn't say it. What's on your mind?
Okay, well, I grew up on an Indian reservation. Our family came out after, 1800s, late 1800s, and we farmed in leased Indian land. And those Indians were so drunk, and they're burning up their, they'd make them cracker boxes, and they'd burn up the wood in their floor. And they got them a casino, and then slowly they started building themselves up. I seen the chief one day sitting out in the driveway and just waiting there. I mean, I bet his heart was just killing him, watching his whole tribe just drink up their checks and stuff. And they've, like, totally turned their lives around. And
I mean, they're not drinking on the res anymore?
No, it's not as bad as it used to be.
Well, what are they doing now with all the money? Buying, like, a Dodge Charger? What are they?
They're buying back some land. They have a resort now. It's in a
so
little...
You mean they're working on their own casinos, or they bring them in from Reno to run it?
I think that the Reno helped them get going, and then...
Oh, I'm shocked by that one.
Yeah, once the mafia got them going, then...
No, we don't mention that. It doesn't exist, but...
What
you're saying is complex. You're saying that the casinos have been a benefit to the folks who live on reservations. They've benefited from the money. Is that what you're saying?
Very beneficial to them. They call.
Well, why? I mean, why would it make them stop drinking?
I don't know. They had there was nothing for them to do out there. They couldn't come to town. No one wanted them in town.
Oh, so you're saying because they have a casino to go to now, they feel better? Is better self-esteem?
Well, they got school. They started learning their language again.
I see. Okay, so there's been some social benefits of the spinoff of the casino money.
Yeah, I mean...
That's all well and good, but why aren't they paying taxes?
Though I think they signed a treaty, you know. They have.
I signed a treaty also. I also signed a treaty when I was born that I'm entitled to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And yet the governor taxes me at 15% of my income, and the nation charges me 50%. Where's my treaty?
Do you think if someone's going into politics...
Well, where's my treaty? I signed the treaty that I'm entitled to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. That was the treaty I signed when I was born as an American. A Native American. I'm a Native American. I was born here, an immigrant son. I signed the treaty. I'm entitled to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Why am I taxed at 15% in the state of California and 50% by the government? Where's my treaty?
Yeah, it's a rotten system sometimes.
Yeah, all right, that's my treaty. I'd like my treaty, too. Unfortunately, my tribal leader sold me down the river. KSFO, John, your opinion. Go ahead, please.
Hello. It's honor to be here. I have a neighbor in my neighborhood in Sonoma County. It's a wealthy neighborhood, and my neighbor is aspiring to be the leader of his Indian group, so that he could start his next casino. And he and I sat down, and he told me about all the inner workings of some of the other tribal leaders, including the leader of the Grayton tribe, because I'm in advertising, and I was trying to get into that business. Figured it'd be a good business to get into, advertising for this new casino that's south of me. And sitting and talking to him, I learned a lot more about this tribal system than I knew going into it. Ahead of time, I would be against the idea of just giving Indians all of this money, and I still am. This is not how we're supposed to be in this country, giving people $100,000 so they can live in a rich neighborhood and not do anything, but basically come up with new schemes and plans to do things and never really work. But when it came,
well, the people put together the Grayton Casino, just opened here north of San Francisco. It's 254 acres. It's as big as Las Vegas. It's an $800 million casino. Where'd the money come from if everyone was so poor?
From my understanding, it's coming from a group in Las Vegas.
Let's let it go at that. That's enough already on the Las Vegas connection. Gee, I'm shocked. I'm just shocked that there's a connection to Las Vegas on the casino. Hey, I don't blame them. If the people want to gamble, fine. Give them that vice. Well, why are they getting away with no taxation? I don't understand that.
Well, they're also, the majority of them, like you said, are gambling away money that they're getting for free from the government, which is...
That's right. That's what I'm telling you. One of the young guys who works for me said to me, he's gone to these casinos, and most of them that he's seen there are welfare recipients, check recipients, who race up there at the beginning of the month with their checks. That's what he said to me. I've never been in an Indian casino in my life. I don't know what they're like. I have never been in one. I'm not a gambler. I don't have it in my blood.
It's too big.
So what I'm saying is they're taking government money and throwing it into a slot machine? So apparently they don't need the government money? How bad could they be living if they can throw the money down a gambling machine? What are we giving them money for? They're impoverished?
Well, I wish I had $100,000 a year and make my life a lot easier. I wouldn't have to work either.
Well, my question is why are there no taxes paid at these casinos is a simple question. I am paying an extortionist state income tax in California. I am being extorted by the government. If they were to tax marijuana and gambling, they could lower my taxes to 5 or 6%. Why don't they do that? I'm a special interest also. I'm called a voter. Thank you for the call. I'll be right back.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
Look, we're talking about marijuana being taxed in Colorado. I'm 100% for that. It should be taxed everywhere in the country, and state taxes should be lowered. I mean, it's got to be a balance here. You can't give these criminals in office both high state taxes and taxation on marijuana. You can't do it. You know, give us a break here. But you know how they are. You know, they're never going to give you a dime back. If I ran for office, I'd run on one platform. Tax marijuana and cut state taxes. That's all. Winning proposition. Joe, KCMO in Kansas City, welcome to the Savage Nation. What topic, please?
On the Indian casinos and the non-taxation of them.
Go ahead.
I don't agree with it. I they should be taxed. And the thing is that they make it easy and they say, well, they're giving the Indians all this money, but they're not. They're taking it right back. I'm Indian out of Oklahoma. And they're supposed to be preserving your culture, but preserving it doesn't mean that you keep me where I was in 1800s. It's to make.
That's interesting. What is your tribal affiliation, Joe?
I'm Cherokee.
Oh, what a great story that is. You talk about tragedy. And yet the Cherokees don't talk about the Trail of Tears and walk around with the victimhood, do they?
No, I mean, absolutely not. And the thing is that, you know, they just keep them there fat and happy. They don't say nothing. And no, you know, everybody complains, well, I'm poor. I'm a poor Indian. I live on a reservation. You know, get your butt up and go to work like everybody else. I did it. I'm not down there. And I'm not taking government money.
So, Joe, you broke the chains of servitude. You broke free of the servitude of government assistance.
Yeah, and that's all it is. I mean,
that's all it is. That's right. I could have stayed there in New York and said, I'm poor and I'll never make it, and walk around with the complaints about the rich, and then voted for this guy Fugazio and think he's going to give me something. You know he's never going to give them anything. Well, that's it. That's it for now. Here's another story to close out with. The country's going into the toilet in a handbasket. New York voters approved 7 Las Vegas-style casinos under Governor Cuomo as a way to revitalize struggling upstate communities. 7 Las Vegas casinos in New York State to help the people.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-7282. Savage. Warning, the Savage Nation contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised. And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, the Savage Nation. And here he is, Michael Savage.
Welcome to hour number 3 for the Savage Nation, November 6th. 2013. Let's go to michaelsavage.com, home of borders, language, and culture. It's all about the election. I was on last night. I was the first in the media to have the numbers. I told you where I'm coming from. It's wonderful to be a purist. I'm a purist. My books are written from a purist point of view. My show is from a purist point of view. But make no mistake about it, I am not running for office. No radio host is running for office. And for them to lead you down a blind alley and tell you to say, oh, yeah, you got to stick to your guns. The last man at the Alamo. Stick to your 100% guns and only do it your way. You know what you'll get elected? Nobody. That's my opinion. It's wonderful to be a purist. I love it. But you're running in the real dirty world of elections. And I'm telling you, unless you understand that, you're going to wind up losing every election going forward. That's my opinion. Look what happened in New York. De Blasio, left-wing fanatic. Christie is a moderate middle-of-the-roader. I don't like his policies. I don't like his amnesty policies. I don't like his abortion policies. There are many things I don't like. But I like about 60% of what Christie stands for. So if you want to throw the baby out with the bathwater, in this case that's quite a big baby and a lot of bathwater, go ahead and do it. Would you rather have had a left-wing fanatic woman as governor of New Jersey? Because that's exactly what the play is going to be when it comes to both the midterm elections and the big kahuna, which is the presidential election in 2016. Imagine it's Christie versus Hillary Clinton. Would you rather see a Christie victory and say, he's not pure enough for me. He's not conservative enough for me. Who needs him? He's a rhino. I'd rather see Hillary Clinton win. That's exactly what got Obama elected. We don't need that. Of course I'd like to see a rock-ribbed right-wing Republican win. Show me how it can happen. It can't happen here. That's my opinion. Take a look at the demographics of America. Take a look at the woman vote. Take a look at the youth vote. They're not you. They're not you. By and large, talk radio appeals to a very small, narrow band of wonderful conservative white males. I've been at this for 20 years. I love you. But you're not the only audience that votes. Radio is one thing. Elections are another thing. Do you understand what I'm saying? Look, I'm not going to lead you down a blind alley. If you want to be led down a blind alley and see Hillary Clinton win in 2016, keep screaming about purist candidates. That's my opinion. I want to ask you a question on the Savage Nation tonight, because the de Blasio election in New York City is not well known outside west of the Hudson River. No one knows who he is. No one heard of him. If you stopped 9,900 people in San Francisco and said, what do you think about de Blasio winning in New York? They would say, huh? Is that a new jewelry store? They don't know who he is. If you stopped 9,900 people in San Francisco and said to them, how do you feel about Christie winning? They might know who he is. He's bigger than life, while de Blasio is smaller than life. And yet he managed to win in New York City. That just shows you what a wonderful campaign his opposition used. I want to combine the question of Christie and de Blasio for a reason. Christie is a middle-of-the-road conservative Republican in some regards. I know that many of you think he's a sellout, he's a rhino, he's no good, and I disagree with him on 50% or more of his policies. But I'd certainly rather have a Christie than a de Blasio as president. I'd certainly, for certain, rather have a Christie who'll give me 50-55% of what I want than a Hillary Clinton who'll give me less than zero. I'm trying to explain to you, it's wonderful to be a purist. It's wonderful to stick to your guns. But, you know, talk radio is not the election itself. Many of you get confused. And I'm afraid many people in talk radio confuse themselves with actual politicians. They scream. They yell. They get apoplexy. They spoil their clothing. They think that they're campaigning when, in fact, there's nobody in the room but them. And they have to remember that they're not actually running for office. Running for office is much different than shooting your mouth off on a microphone in a toilet bowl. And you have to understand that it may be entertaining to people screaming in a toilet bowl about what should be done and who is true, and I'm the Pope, and I know who the true believers are, and anyone who doesn't believe in what I believe in shall be lined up against the wall and shot when we win. That sounds wonderful. It's very theatrical. But now go out and try to win an election in this country today with the state of mind that exists. The electorate is not what you think it is. The electorate is much wider than what you think it is. I've written purist books. I don't have to name them for you. I don't intend to name them for you. Many of you know what they are. I'm not here to sell you a book. And in a book, you can be a purist. In radio, you can be a purist. But the minute you run for office, you have to understand it's a wider world. It's a bigger boat than the one that you came from. And I am telling you that if you don't like Christie as a candidate for the Republican nomination in 2016, and I pretty much can tell you right now he has it locked up, I would say it's almost 100% sure he's the only front runner there is. If you don't like him, then you better learn what a true leftist is and what they stand for. And there is no better lesson for you than to look at Mr. de Blasio in New York City, who has had a lifetime of being a progressive. You have stepped into the shoes of every demagogue going back to Julius Caesar, de Blasio. You don't fool anybody for a minute. Anybody with an IQ over 19 can read right through this pitch, which is get the rich. Take away their shoes, take away their suits, take away their cars. Throw them out of their apartments. Great. We heard it all before. It worked real well in Russia. Tyrone on WABC, you voted for de Blasio. Tell us why you're on the Savage Nation. Thanks for calling.
I voted for de Blasio because the stop and frisk tactics from Bloomberg was horrible. So anything that's the opposite from that,
What do you mean it was horrible? Wasn't crime at an all-time low under the stop-and-frisk program that the NYPD was following?
Yeah, the crime was low. But for those who wasn't committing crimes, then you could just be walking down a block and the cops would stop you, search you, or frisk you. It's just,
you know, I'm a white guy, and when I was a kid growing up in Queens, I remember the cops in my neighborhood would stop us because we looked like punks, and they'd frisk us. Everyone thought it was a good idea. Because there were some bad people walking around with guns. And most New Yorkers liked stop and frisk.
Well, most New Yorkers in New York City, but outside the other boroughs in the Bronx.
So what would you say, my friend Tyrone, if the crime starts to go up again and these punks who are no longer being stopped and frisk, but allowed to go out and go and risk, start holding up people, beating them up and whatnot? What are you going to do then?
And that's horrible. That's horrible. I understand.
All right, you're a reasonable man. But I think he appealed to the basest instincts in you. I'll be right back.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE. 855-400-7282. Savage.
Inequality in New York is not something that only threatens those who are struggling. The stakes are so high for every New Yorker. And making sure no son or daughter of New York falls behind.
Oh, yeah, right. We heard this before, right? Right. Yeah, the magic wand. You're gonna magic wand. Every poor child's gonna be rich under de Blasio, and every rich child's gonna be poor under de Blasio. I mean, you've heard this before. We've read it before. Read Madame Defarge. Read the French Revolution. Just keep promising the morons that they can have what the other man worked for, and you'll get very far in life. We've seen it with Obama on a minor scale. You've seen nothing yet. Wait until de Blasio warms up. Now, this has nothing to do with de Blasio. It's a little diversion. I know many of you enjoy hearing this, but this has nothing to do with de Blasio, but I've taken a liking to what I call Guido suits. They're velour warm-up suits. And I've ordered, I can't find them on the West Coast. They don't ship them west of the Hudson River for some reason. I had to search the internet. I found an old one in the closet that I bought many years ago, and I found out it's easier than selecting clothing every day. Put it on. So I couldn't find the pair. I tried Macy's. No one had them. I found the company in Brooklyn. It took an Orthodox Jew to tell me, I got plenty, though. I don't know where he got them from. He had boxes of them in my size with the right label on. Don't take a large. Guy your size, you need a medium. And he was right. So I bought it on the internet. It was expensive. I couldn't wait. I figured three things would happen. It would arrive in tattered. It would be used and refurbished. There would be a disease in the box with the suit. My credit card would be purged by someone. None of that happened. The thing arrived and it fit perfectly. So I called him up today. I said, Mike, what can I... And I ordered another one in black today. And I say it has nothing to do with de Blasio, but the thing is I love these suits. They're unbelievable. And they're wonderful for doing radio, and I got to tell you. And number two, if you listen to the show, you know, last night I was live in this city at KSFO in the radio station, and everyone said it sounded like you were having fun. This is how I raced in rush hour, had to dodge this, got the pizza, the hands blew up, the legs blew up. I hate eating pizza, yet I love eating pizza. It's my favorite food, and it makes me sick. My joints hurt, my ankles blow up, and I say never again. Every bite is delicious, and it's poison. As my great friend Dr. Cathcart taught me many, many decades ago, he said, we are addicted to that which hurts us the most. That's whether it's food or sex. Whatever we're more addicted to, whatever we love the most we're addicted to makes us sick. It's true. Whether it's a pizza or a you-know-what. So I'm not in the city tonight. staring across at the two handsome faces that I saw last night. No, I'm now back in a room wearing my Guido suit, staring at a blank curtain in a room somewhere in a remote. I'm 3 feet from a heavy green curtain wearing a light blue velour tracksuit. And I'm looking at the world in a different set of eyes. New York went crazy. Out of hatred for those who have more, those who drive around in better cars must have stolen it from the man with a squeegee in his hand. Those who get the prettier women, they didn't deserve the prettier women because they're smarter and provide better. No, they stole that woman from the downtrodden creep with a bad job. Those who live in the nice apartments in Manhattan, they don't deserve them. They stole them from the workers, the strap hangers. At least that's what they believe. 855-407-282. Why would you vote for a guy like de Blasio? I mean, I know how he won. There was no one running against him. He was invisible. Do you remember that, this campaign? I'm not even in New York. I remember it. Do you remember who was running way ahead of him? The deviant, perverted psycho from Queens or Brooklyn was way ahead of him. No one ever heard of de Blasio. But the perv blew up his campaign. And then all of a sudden, this guy comes out of nowhere. And now New York's going to be stuck with him. But yet there are people who actually believe him. Jose on WABC, you voted for de Blasio. Please tell America why.
There's too many stop and frisks over here. People stop and frisking and too much persecution of the same-sex relationships and stuff.
Now, were you personally stopped and frisked?
Absolutely. They frisk me all the time. They make minorities are late to work all the time, being frisked all the time.
So you mean every minority was frisked in New York?
What?
Every minority was frisked all the time in New York?
It's all recorded. It's on the nightly news, on the ABC News.
Well, because the nightly news are a bunch of demagogues who want to stir up the masses against the white people in the city. You know that. It's a race war. You know what the media is built upon. The media is built upon race war. The media has a couple of mottos. If it burns, it earns. If you can stir up one race against the other, people will listen to you. So you don't understand that? Now, how do you explain that the crime went down with stop and frisk? How do you explain that?
There's a bunch of fat cats living in $150 million apartments. They don't pay any taxes.
Jose, how do you explain that the stop and frisk campaign by the NYPD reduced violent crime in the city? How do you explain that away?
These statistics are all fabricated by the Republicans.
No, you have it backwards, as you will soon find out. De Blasio twisted the statistics and made you think that it was all a lie. That psychotic liberal Judge Scheindlin is an example of everything that is wrong with America. An activist, left-wing, fanatic judge says it's illegal, and she twists the statistics to pander to the minorities. Don't you understand that politicians are not to be trusted, that you gotta judge things by how they are in the street, on the elbow-thrashing level of life. Not by what you hear from the liars on a podium. Jose, you're going to see with your own eyes over the next months and years whether the statistics about stop and frisk were right and wrong. I will tell you this. Right after stop and frisk was ended by Judge Fanatic Scheindlin, African-American women in Bed-Stuy, African-American women who are raising children on their own came out against her. And they said, why did she do that? We are in favor of it. Our children are going to be in danger from the punks who have guns. We want stop and frisk to come back. But de Blasio didn't tell you that. The Daily News didn't tell you that. The Daily News features any story that panders to your prejudices to sell a paper. That's my opinion. So the questions remain, why did you vote for de Blasio or Christie? The bigger question for the nation is, would you rather have a moderate, middle-of-the-road Republican like Christie in 2016 or Hillary Clinton? My position is, he is a rhino. I don't like rhinos, but I'd rather have 50% on the dollar than zero on the dollar, number one. I don't believe Ted Cruz can ever win a national election. In fact, I will tell you right now, I would bet $10 million he could never win a national election. I would bet every dime I have that he could never win a national election. Now, many of you are going to find this contemptuous, because you've been misled to believe that he's a national figure. I hope that I'm wrong. How's that? I hope that I'm wrong. I hope that I'm wrong, and I hope that he wins, and I hope he's a national figure. I would say that I'd bet $10 million he could never get there, ever. That's number three. Then the other topic is the marijuana topic. I love what Colorado did. The voters approved a 25% tax on recreational marijuana. And the first $40 million in revenue will go to public schools. It was approved by voters yesterday. Governor John Hickenlooper said, the move showed a willingness on the part of Colorado voters to tax marijuana for the public benefit, even as they roundly defeated a broader tax measure that would have increased state income taxes to raise $1 billion for schools. So the people of Colorado, who are very liberal, said, we don't want higher state income tax, but we want to tax the drug addicts who smoke marijuana. The same should be done in California. It should be taxed, and the state tax should be lowered to 8%, Mr. Brown. Governor Jerry Brown, if you want to truly be a bipartisan governor, and be remembered for being a bipartisan governor, and get reelected until you're 150, Governor Brown, tax marijuana and lower the state income tax to 7 or 8%. And I'll throw another kicker in there, since you're listening to me so carefully right now, everybody who listens to me so carefully right now, since there's no ball game and no one else to listen to but me. There was an article that was written about me last January on the dangers of the flu vaccine. January 2013 it came out. It was reposted on the Drudge Report yesterday. It got almost a million hits in one day. How could it be that I, a conservative, would attract so many visitors to an article about a health-related topic if I am of no value? If I am of no value whatsoever, Fox News will have unknown talk show hosts on, and they won't have me on, and that's fine. I will never go on Fox News. I don't need them. And obviously, they don't need me. They need a striptease show, and they need a lipstick show. That's what they got.
Savage. KSFO.
China is becoming more and more aggressive, not only in trade and militarily, but now we're hearing, listen to this very carefully, China is moving to become the world's reserve currency. Did you hear that? They're buying up all the gold. Joining us now on the Savage Nation to help us understand this terrible topic is my good friend Craig Smith, the chairman of Swiss America Trading Corporation, author, friend, and sponsor of this show. You've got to know that. But I had him on as a guest, not as a sponsor. Why? Because he understands this topic better than almost anyone. Craig Smith, welcome back to the Savage Nation.
Well, thank you, Michael. It's always good to be with you.
Okay, so what are the Chinese doing now? What are they trying to achieve?
You and I have been talking about it on and off for the last 10, 11 years, and now we're starting to see it actually in the press, and that is that today, in both the French papers and the Canadian papers, and suspiciously missing from the American papers, I might add, China is seeking a role with its currency, what they call the people's currency, the RMB, to actually compete against the U.S. dollar and challenge the hegemony that the U.S. dollar has maintained since the Bretton Woods Agreement.
Well, what could that mean for the dollar?
Simply put, is that the dollar, for the first time since the 50s, will actually have a competing currency in the event of a crisis. In other words, traditionally when something critical happens in the world, everybody runs to the U.S. dollar as a safe haven. Well, China is going to try and offer a currency that would be a safe currency to be in the event of an emergency, if you will, a reserve currency. And the moves that we have seen China make over the last several years of buying literally thousands of tons of gold, this doesn't surprise me. We wrote about it in all four books. Matter of fact, the recent book that you've been talking about, The Great Withdrawal, we talk about what happens when the world withdraws from the U.S. dollar. So, yeah, this is very troubling news. I don't know if it's nefarious in nature, Michael, but I can tell you this. It's very destructive for the U.S. dollar, very potentially harmful to American citizens that hold their savings, hold their finances in the form of dollars.
To most of us, reserve currency and foreign exchange is as complicated as Greek. Can you simplify these concepts for the Savage Nation?
Yeah, I'll try to. Let's just assume... Simply put, a reserve currency is a currency, as I said, that everybody goes to in a crisis. But it's also a currency that's used as a medium of exchange between countries. For example, let's say that Russia has oil to sell to Holland, and Russia does not particularly care to be paid in Dutch guilders, or vice versa. The Dutch doesn't want to be paid in rubles. What Russia will require is for the Dutch to go out and take their guilders and buy U.S. dollars and then pay for their oil in the form of U.S. dollars. That's why we refer to it as the petrodollar. The U.S. dollars and petrodollars that are used back for the exchange of oil over in the Middle East. So the U.S. dollar has always been used as a currency to settle out accounts, if you will. Well, the forex markets, or the foreign exchange markets, trade literally trillions of dollars every day with minute little movements, you know, 1/100th of a percent or 1/1000th of a percent. And, of course, when you're talking about trillions of dollars, that adds up to a significant amount of money. So you have these foreign currencies that are moving all over the place, but they ultimately would go through the reserve currency at the end of the final day when the transaction settled in the form of a U.S. dollar. And then the U.S. dollar may be exchanged into yuan for the country of China or yuan for the South Koreans or what have you. So that's a simplification of it. But the big part of the foreign exchange markets is never before have we have had China say, we want to be part of that market, not just on a currency basis, because now they're about the eighth most traded currency in the world. This would move them into the fourth, third, or second position, very similar to what happened to the euro dollar. I mean, you know, all of a sudden the euro showed up, and it started competing against the dollar. And, of course, it started off where you could buy a euro at 87 U.S. cents. Today, a euro costs you $1.35. So I'm very, very concerned that the Chinese are very serious to not only get involved in the foreign exchange markets of using their currencies to settle trades between countries, but also to move into a reserve currency status. And again, Michael, the thing to keep in mind, and that's, thank God for the Savage Nation, where's the Wall Street Journal on this? Where's the New York Times? Where's the LA Times? Where are the papers in America? You have to read the papers in France. You have to read the papers up in Vancouver, Toronto, in order to be able to see that this is occurring. And that shouldn't be the case. This should be headline news in every newspaper, headline news on every news show starting this evening.
Craig, do you really think there's a chance of America losing its reserve currency status?
I do, and I've been very concerned about that, Michael, for at least the last 5 years. The last two books we've written, we've basically said we are going to lose our reserve currency status, because keep in mind, we're the only nation in the history of the world that's ever been a reserve currency nation that's been a debtor nation. We have to keep in mind, we are the largest debtor in the world. We owe more money than any other nation in the world. And yet our currency is still held out as the most reliable currency, the safest currency to be in. Well, that all changed back in 2011 during the budget crisis, when we were downgraded for the first time in the history of the country from AAA status, which means we are totally safe. There's zero risk in holding our currency, from AAA to AA+. Now, we went to AA+. We're still a great currency, but we're not risk-free. And so I was concerned when that happened. I was also concerned when I started seeing the Chinese buying these massive amounts of gold. I mean, Michael, they don't buy gold just because they like the shiny yellow metal. I mean, if you notice the Middle East Far East, they don't wear a lot of jewelry, for Pete's sakes. They're buying thousands of tons of gold, putting this away. And in Jim Rickard's book, Currency Wars, he talks about a scenario where a foreign nation puts a gold reserve away, they issue a new currency, and next thing you know, there won't have to be a shot fired as it relates to taking over militarily around the world, because a nation that has no money to fight with can't buy bullets and guns and tanks and so on and so forth. So, yes, I'm extremely concerned we're going to lose our reserve currency status, and we better take some steps to start protecting the dollar. And Mr. Bernanke is doing just the opposite, Michael. He's printing $85 billion a month to buy bonds to keep the economy going, to keep the stock market up. He can't do that forever. And the other day, Mark Faber, they call him Dr. Doom, he said they're never going to taper. They may start printing $200 billion or $300 billion or $1 trillion a month. And Mr. Bernanke is clearly trying to print his way out of the mess we have in America. If he continues down this path, I'm convinced we are going to lose our reserve currency status, and that is not going to be a good thing for this nation.
Many people don't follow the foreign exchange. So what's the effect going to be on us here in America and those around the world who are holding dollars?
Yeah, that's the best question, Michael, because, you know, people will hear these stories and they'll say, well, what does that mean to me? It's real simple. If you're getting ready to borrow money and we lose our reserve currency status, your cost of borrowing money is going to go up precipitously. You can kiss 4% mortgages away overnight. That's number one. Number two, we're going to have higher costs of borrowing money in America to finance our deficits. So that's going to blow huge holes in our deficit spending every year. It's going to blow huge holes in our budgets. It will actually force us to probably live within our means, which I'm not sure we're able to do without slashing and burning a lot of programs that probably need to go. But, you know, they're going to scream bloody murder in Washington, D.C. because, you know, the sacred cows in Washington, D.C. don't want to be touched. But also with Americans, it's going to cause a huge spike in your cost of living. And that's our biggest concern here, Michael. If we lose our reserve currency status, your dollar, let's say it costs you $1,000 a month to live today, and we lose our currency status, and, you know, that's your power bill and your food and so on and so forth, your cost of living may jump to $1,200 or $1,300 or $1,500 or $2,000 a month. Now, people that are on fixed incomes like Social Security or they're on, you know, they have retirement income coming in and they have no way to offset those increases, they're going to have to reduce their standard of living to be able to accommodate this.
Where can we read more about this?
Well, you know, you can go to our website. You can go to greatdebasement.com or you can also go to swissamerica.com. And also, I think recently, Michael, you've been offering your listeners the book actually complimentary, so they can give the offices a call at 800-289-2646. Mention you're a Savage listener, and we'll make sure we get a copy of the book into your hands. We ask you to read the book and then call in the programs and discuss this because, you know, Michael, I'm convinced of this. This is why I love your show. When Americans start talking about these issues and they start calling into programs like yours and they get the other side of the story, a thoughtful mind that thinks these things through, the American people come up with the solutions and we can stop this craziness that's coming out of Washington, D.C. So you can get a hold of us those three ways, and I really appreciate you bringing this to your audience, Michael. It's critical information that very few people, if any, are covering, and so I appreciate it.
Craig Smith, thanks again for being with us on The Savage Nation.
Thank you, Michael.
I'll be right back.
Join The Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
I was supposed to take the day off. I had an appointment about 40 miles north of here in Santa Rosa, California. Then I found out from one of my assistants that I shouldn't go today because they opened a gambling casino up in a town about 20 miles, on the halfway there. And he said, you're going to get caught. You'll never get past the traffic. And lo and behold, they opened the casino yesterday. And some losers lined up at 3 o'clock in the morning outside this Indian gambling casino. Indian gambling casino. Like, I'm an Indian. I could open one. I love it, the word Indian casino. Everyone knows what a sham that is. They came by car, by bus, by wheelchair, and by walker to place the first bets at the casino near Rohnert Park. This casino was on the size of a Las Vegas-sized casino within 30 miles of San Francisco. 254 acres, $800 million, 13 restaurants, 144 tables, 3,000 slot machines, 43 minutes from the San Francisco Bay. 78 blackjack tables for the losers. And so they opened the casino. And who do you think swarmed in there on opening day? Was it a truck driver? No, he was driving a truck. Was it a carpenter? No, he was planing wood. Was it a plumber? No, he was plumbing pipes. Was it a word processor? No, she was processing words. So who went into that casino? If you actually study these things, you find out that it's largely people on welfare who swarm the casinos with government checks. They get the government checks and they throw them into the slot machine. Isn't that a nice system? Isn't that wonderful? So if the fools want to gamble their life savings away, I say tax the Indian casinos. For the life of me, I don't understand why states don't tax Indian gambling casinos. Can somebody explain that to me? Tax marijuana, tax Indian gambling casinos at a reasonable rate like all of us pay, lower state income tax to 6 or 7%, and everybody wins. Do you agree or disagree with that idea and tell me why? I want the answer. I'm not a fanatic. I want your answers on these questions. I want the dialogue to be had. Should marijuana be taxed as it is in Colorado? That's a no-brainer, yes. Should Indian gambling casinos be taxed? Duh, why not? Why? I don't understand that. 855-400-7282. I have many people who don't like Christy, and they're going to tell us why. Where's the one you said I should take? WMAL. I love the call letters of radio stations. I can say them in my sleep. We say certain acronyms are so exciting. I learned from somebody at Cumulus yesterday where the acronym WLS in Chicago came from. I had no idea. I've been in the business 20 years this March. You know, like radio stations, you think they make them up out of the air. Like Chicago has a monster station, WLS, owned by Cumulus, which I'll be on for the first time. I said, where did that come from? He said, world's largest store. At the time, it was Sears. That was W. I had no idea. I mean, you learn things, and I find it fascinating. You got to love radio to understand what I'm saying. KSFO, Jason, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, I was going to say, Dr. Savage, I have a new name for de Blasio. His name should be Fugazio, you know, like Fugazio.
Now, wait, hold it. Is that a dirty word in Italian?
I don't think so.
Wait, we don't know. We can't use words like that. I don't know what it means.
You know, like...
I'm sure it's... I don't know what it means. Oh, Fugazi is a... I get it. I remember now. Fugazi is a fake jewel, fake diamond.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, so that's very good. What, Fugazi? Jason, how'd you figure that out?
I don't know. I thought I was going to call yesterday with it, but then
Oh, no, that's hilarious. I think you got the winning prize. I know he's a Fugazi. I absolutely know that he's not going to do anything that he promised the poor. What's he going to give the poor that he can get? What can he do to make them happy? Tell me. Is he going to give away apartments on the Upper East Side in a lottery?
Well, I doubt it.
So what's he going to do for the poor? He's going to institute a new income tax on the people in New York City. They did that back in the 1950s, and people moved to Connecticut because of that.
Well, you know, I don't think he's going to... He's going to just make the situation worse, and Bloomberg is...
Yeah, he'll turn one race against the other. Crime will go through the ceiling. That's my fear, not my hope. By the way, I hope I'm wrong. I hope that we can see that progressives know how to run a city. Here in San Francisco, I'll show you what a progressive city is like. After I got off the air last night in San Francisco, which is down to the south of Market, you know, it's a booming area. There are cranes everywhere building buildings. And there's big internet, young, blah, 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 blue. Very interesting to watch. After the show, I jumped in the car. We went over to an area I've been going to since I moved here. The reason I moved here was because of the Italian-Chinese area of North Beach Chinatown. I just took to it right away. It's my favorite town in the whole world is the Italian district. The architecture is from, I think it's from the post-earthquake, obviously. It has to be that. It's very charming, low-rise, and it butts up against the financial center with the high-rises. And it meets Chinatown, as Little Italy used to meet Chinatown. It's very interesting, by the way. I went over there last night. I was going to grab some cheap Chinese food. My luck, it was Tuesday night, and the one greasy Chinese joint that I haven't been in years was closed. It's only closed on Tuesday nights. So I wound up walking in the dark streets. Here's what I'm getting at. Here's a progressive city. You have never seen garbage like you've seen in San Francisco. It's a national disgrace. This is a progressive city that you can puke from. Oh, you can look at the ferries and the cable can, you know, bring me to a hill. You look at all of the propaganda, but you go walk in the streets and look at the filth in San Francisco. You can get sick from what progressives have done to this city. The garbage outside of the Bank of America on Columbus Avenue in North Beach is something that you would not see in a third world city today. There's not a major city in the third world that would look as dirty as San Francisco does under liberals. That's all I can tell you. And I will tell you this. To prove my point, I am going to have my assistant start taking pictures of the dirtiest streets in the city and put them up on michaelsavage.com. You'll be appalled at what you see. It'll be the opposite of what you're being told you're going to get from the de Blasio of the West. So now all of the people are saying, I voted for him because I didn't like stop and frisk. That had become an issue. So he appealed to the black people and the Hispanic people, and it made it sound like elitist cops were frisking only black guys and Hispanic guys, and they were doing it based on race, not based on crime statistics and areas in which they were being frisked. They made it sound as though cops were breaking into middle-class African-American homes and frisking people on their stoop. And, of course, the people on the bottom bought it. They wanted to get the rich. Well, we'll see what happens. And so now we have in New York a guy comes along. No one heard of him. He's been around forever. Grew up in Boston under the name Wilhelm. Changed his name to Wilhelm de Blasio. Now he's de Blasio. And now suddenly everyone loves him, and he's going to give to the poor what they don't have. Because the poor, as you know, when they were riding on a subway, and I was once poor riding on a subway car, I funnily, as an immigrant son, didn't hate the rich. I wanted to be like them. How does that work out? I wanted to be the woman in the car. I didn't sit there seething. I thought how nice that would be to be having a Rolls Royce with a driver and a blanket taking me to lunch.
Savage.